Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the Southern Baptist Convention, who just this week reaffirmed their long-standing sexism and bigotry by declaring that churches with female pastors cannot continue in fellowship with the SBC. Of course, we note our continued opposition to the term fellowship, with its clearly sexist implication that only men are capable of harmonious socializing, which is why we call our post-worship service refreshment area Othership Hall. So yes, the SBC reaffirmed the toxic masculinity that has so plagued Christianity ever since the time of the famously misogynistic Apostle Paul, who actually stated twice in his New Testament letters that men should be pastors, and even went so far as to say women ought not to preach or assume authority over men and should just be silent in church, also twice. Worse, he based his conception of gender roles on the order of creation, Adam then Eve, and their differentiated participation in the fall from grace and subsequent expulsion from the garden. Combine this with the fact that none of Jesus' disciples were women, and you can see why people foolish enough to take the Bible seriously wind up doing what Catholics, Eastern Orthodox, conservative Presbyterians and Lutherans, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, and even Orthodox Jews have always done, which is to reserve leadership roles in the church for men only. Well, dear Othering, this must not be. If there is anything which we stand firmly for, it is the total equality of women with men in all ways and forms, even to the point of believing that gender is merely a person-made construct. Hence our core affirmation of the holy acronym string, People of the Rainbow, and the ongoing rejection of the traditional symbols for male and female, preferring instead to use only the sacred symbol of the almighty gender non-binary, a question mark. Even our baptistries are filled with only the most ambiguous of unisex gender fluids. So whether it is the perpetuation of gender binarism, the oppression of women by men in the traditional Judeo-Christian patriarchy, or the highly regressive affirmation of the Bible as a reliable resource instead of a purely fictitious invention by foolish and primitive male writers, this move by the SBC has decidedly earned them our most sincere and definitive cancellation. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Meanwhile, there is some cause for celebration. Even within the weird, twisted, and repressive world of Christian churches, despite the horrifyingly consistent move by the Baptists, this week simultaneously witnessed one of the most beautiful and inspiring actions on the opposite end of the Christianity spectrum by the super-progressive Presbyterian Church USA. Not to be confused with the Presbyterian Church of America, PCA, or the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, EPC, the PCUSA has long been much more closely aligned with our own values, moving to openly allow gay marriage or allow openly gay clergy in 2011 and affirm gay marriage in 2014. However, there was a moment of concern this week when the Sierra Blanca Presbytery submitted a proposal for this summer's General Assembly, which would require that pastors must display, quote, moral character, and, quote, if engaged in any relationship of a sexual nature, be living in a monogamous one. In other words, this oddly conservative congregation intends to forbid PCUSA clergy from being in open or plural relationships. Although all 50 states still outlaw formal polygamy or technically bigamy, we sidestep the legal questions by referring to it vaguely as polyamory, or for precision, biamory, triamory, quadramory, or when necessary, sesquicentamory, if someone is in a serious sexual relationship with 150 other people. In any case, despite this very traditional effort to keep pastors from expressing their sexuality with more than one person at a time, the good news is that the leaders of the PCUSA were absolutely having none of it. Literally, three different church advisory committees have now publicly criticized the proposed rule called Con 10, which would artificially limit PCUSA pastors to just one sexual partner at a time. The Advocacy Committee for Women and Gender Justice called it an attempt to, quote, regulate the private lives and relational structures of individuals in ways that risk harm rather than healing. They also said it could, quote, unintentionally reinforce systems of shame, silence, and spiritual coercion. Gaia forbid. The Advocacy Committee on LGBTQIA+ Equity said the proposal reinforces, quote, a narrow culturally specific understanding of family that privileges, quote, a dominant cultural framework over the lived realities of communities of color and global Christians. They noted that polyamorous relationships report levels of happiness comparable to those of monogamous couples. And as we all know, if a behavior makes you happy, it definitely can't be sinful. Yet a third church entity, the Advisory Committee on Social Wellness Policy, criticized the measure and counseled the denomination to seek more research on, quote, diverse understandings of relationships. Well, encouraged by these developments, a pro-polyamory group of PCUSA activists calling themselves More Light Presbyterians even hosted a training class called Faithful Polyamory 101. Claudia Aguilar Rubalcava, the director of engagement for More Light, said this is the next big conversation mainline denominations will have. She added that the monogamy proposal targets queer communities and unjustly, quote, centers a single model of relationship as the only faithful expression of Christian life, ignoring both the breadth and biblical witness and the lived realities of many faithful people. We couldn't agree more, praise Gaia. So kudos to you, PCUSA, for embracing the newest letter of the holy acronym string so emphatically, P for polyamory. You get this week's giant lube of justice. Loot of Justice Award for so emphatically embracing the full rainbow of fruit flavors and for reminding people that number of lovers is certainly a far more arbitrary relational boundary than gender. Even though we don't believe gender is real, we do still believe numbers are real, at least for now. But we certainly believe they shouldn't matter when it comes to love. So well done, PCUSA, and thank you for being part of the LGBTQ2SIA+P Alliance. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to talk about a very serious subject, something close to our eternally bleeding hearts, the bullying of Elmo. Yes, tragically, the forces of darkness in this world have taken it upon themselves to harshly and undeservedly other, marginalize, oppress, and verbally assault our favorite little red Muppet Otherin. We say Otherin because, after all, even Elmo isn't entirely sure of their gender identity, making them a courteous or courageous hero of gender fluidity. So what did the little non-binary bundle of unconditional love do to bring this hatred upon their self? Well, they posted this six-word tweet about the NBA Finals between the San Antonio Spurs and the New York Knicks.
Elmo hope both teams have fun,
followed by four basketball emojis. Now I know, at first this might not seem like anything controversial. After all, who could be upset by the sock puppet of happiness hoping that two competing teams will have a good time? Problem, of course, is that Elmo lives on Sesame Street, and Sesame Street is famously set in New York City, meaning that New York Knicks fans expected Elmo to be, like them, a devoted Knicks fan instead of some fence-sitting spectator who refused to root for his own hometown team. Long-suffering Knicks fans haven't seen an NBA title since 1973 and haven't even seen their team in the finals since 1999, a finals that saw the very same Spurs demolish them 4-1, the same team which has won four other titles since. As a result, the online ire for Elmo from his fellow New Yorkers was intense. The New York PD accused him of his account being hacked, tweeting, "Just like in Times Square, we think this Elmo is an imposter." Former New York Mayor Eric Adams simply tweeted a meme of bruh. The New York Department of Transportation threatened the honorary Sesame Street sign at 63rd and Broadway with a picture of its unveiling and the sinister caption, "Don't make us take this down, bro." Others called Elmo a coward for not picking a side, and one particularly obnoxious tweet even showed an obviously fake Elmo snorting a long line of white powder, cruelly mocking our substance-dependent other and just for a cheap laugh. Even someone who is usually the epitome of tact, diplomacy, and wisdom, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, said Elmo's tweet was Rocco behavior. For those who don't know, this reference cuts especially deep since Rocco is Elmo's friend Zoe's pet rock, whose ability to live, breathe, enjoy playdates, go to parties, and even consume the last oatmeal raisin cookie when Elmo had clearly wanted it has vexed Elmo for years. In a way, Rocco is the epitome of a trans-animate being, a rock who identifies as living, a puzzle which the imaginary pretend-alive Muppet has always struggled with, but I digress. Look, of course we would normally side with New Yorkers in anything, since they only elect the best people, and apart from San Francisco, Portland, and Boulder, Colorado, they are the strongest bastions of our religion. Nevertheless, the greater problem here is that true wokists like us never like nor really understand sports, for the simple fact that sports far too much like capitalism. There are winners and losers, in other words, inequality. Only one team can win each year while all the others lose. Triumph and failure are the essence of sport rather than the shared dull gray warmth of egalitarian mediocrity we prefer. We also don't like the ideas of hard work and productivity. We prefer to believe in a world where everyone just does their best all the time out of the decency and goodness of their hearts without selfish rewards. Despite our affection for certain socialistic elements of sport like salary caps and better draft picks for underperforming teams, we see sport in general, and basketball in particular, as far too capitalistic. So when Elmo tells everyone to just have fun and not worry about the results, they are really just being a good little wokeling, which we love. But after the bullying, a beleaguered Elmo issued a semi-apology tweet.
Nix that last message. Elmo didn't mean to spur you on.
Yes, It was sad Elmo felt the need to retract their endorsement of friendliness and fun, but the worst part has been the deafening silence from all of Elmo's supposedly devoted friends on Sesame Street. As a champion of kindness and solidarity, Elmo could have at least hoped that Big Bird, Cookie Monster, Oscar the Grouch, or even Grover might have come to their defense while being so flagrantly fouled on the Twitterverse. Even the Count only took time to show that he was numbering the days until the World Cup began, completely ignoring his suffering friend's pain. For shame, Team Sesame, for shame. You should have been more kind to your adorable little buddy. It's almost enough to make someone become a Brooklyn Nets fan. Almost. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.